Word of mouth.
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 Mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. Today's program is all about games, which humans have played across cultures and for millennia, and which make up some of our earliest individual experiences with socialization and rules. While tossing the idea around, I had to fess up to my colleagues that I have not played a video game since, well, since Pong. I know that globally, millions of people of all stripes are gamers. I'm in the media. I talk to gamers frequently. I know what's out there for electronic games and about gameplay culture and creativity and sexism and concerns about violence, but had never put one of those consoles into my own hands. So it was time to try. We chose the game Skyfall. Actually, it's called Skyrim, but my brain defaulted to the name of a Bond film that I know. Cold comfort for my utterly new experience in a brilliantly crafted medieval universe where I was a character armed with a mace and some kind of magic hand.
So here I have my sort of crozier. I guess it's not a crozier when it's used
this
for killing.
This is a mace.
Mace.
And your left
I've
hand
got my
a...
mace in the right hand, and my left hand is shooting lightning.
Yeah.
With producers Taylor Quimby and Zach Nugent as my gamer guides, I dove in console first.
Your two index fingers, you want to be on these back triggers here that are almost like joystick triggers.
Oh,
now, if you pull your right trigger.
Oh, I just swiped at someone pretty mightily.
And I have to admit, it was fun. It made me want to practice and learn how to play better. But I did learn a few key lessons. One, look ahead, not up.
I just want to see what's here. But I think I'm looking up in the air again.
Two, know the purpose of the game before starting.
So you're basically, we're just cruising around waiting for something bad to happen, right?
Three, be prepared to defeat your enemies at a moment's notice.
Oh, there's somebody behind you.
Oh, what happens now?
You gotta flip around and kill him.
Turn around and kill him.
No.
I gotta get closer to him. Hey, why is this thing buzzing?
Oh.
I'm getting slaughtered!
And if failing miserably, change your strategy.
You could get a sword that's got a little further reach.
Yeah.
And you could change your magic so it might help kill these guys with less aim, that sort of thing.
Okay, that would be really good for me.
Number four, pause every now and then and take in the beauty.
It is actually quite a pretty universe here.
And number five, be patient.
Oh, see, look, you're already moving much faster than you were a few minutes ago.
Noticeably better.
Okay, there's a bad guy. Stop. Okay. He hasn't seen you yet. Sort of aim towards him.
See that, like, middle little aimer?
There we go. Yeah, the little aimer thing. Now press the, hold on, press the left button, the fire one. Hold it down. Let it go. You got him on fire. He's on fire.
Do it. Oh, really?
Yeah, he's on fire. Well.
Oh, crap.
Okay. Run away.
I can't.
But being patient is tough. It was extremely frustrating not to have the eye-hand coordination to move around quickly or defend myself from all manner of attackers.
I have to go back up
the tower. You probably have to go back up the
tower. Oh, what?
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus. Okay, I'm done.
See, that's the first. That's where you throw the thing. That's where you throw your controller.
It was enough to have me longing for a tense, competitive game of Trivial Pursuit after a family dinner. There is something to that frustration, it turns out. Yeah, we've all heard the debate about whether graphically violent video games lead to aggressive or hostile behavior among players. A new study suggests it may not be the content that drives the player's anger, but frustration. That would mean that controversial games like Grand Theft Auto may have less impact on player behavior than the 1980 arcade classic Defender, which is commonly ranked among the most difficult video games of all time. So let the games begin. First up, Andrew Shabilsky, researcher at the Oxford Internet Institute and co-author of the study linking frustration to aggressive behavior. I asked him about the sorts of gameplay that the study linked to aggression and what it is that makes a game frustrating to play.
Actually, what we found was it's the opposite side of the coin of the kinds of things that make games so popular and so motivating and so fun. And so what we actually investigated was the ways in which, instead of supporting basic psychological needs, the kinds of ways that maybe games thwart them by having either very complex control schemes overly complicated challenges and too steep of a learning curve, not enough opportunities for kind of growth and development of the player across the course of play.
So how did you conduct the study?
Well, actually, you could say it is a study, but in fact, it was seven studies or eight studies, depending on how you count. And so what we did was we used a number of different methods to manipulate a sense of player competence. So in a set of the studies, what we did was we manipulated the amount of time participants were allowed to practice learning how to play the basics of a video game before they were exposed to any violent or nonviolent content. In another set of studies, what we did was we actually manipulated how complicated the control interface was. So we had a fairly simple puzzle game, but we either had participants, we randomly assigned them to play with very simple game controls that were very intuitive, or very complicated ones that made them think constantly. And then finally, the other thing we did was we actually manipulated the in-game challenges of a video game. So instead of giving pieces fairly in a puzzle game, the puzzle game Tetris, what we reprogrammed the logic of the game to give an impossible combination of pieces. So no matter how good players were, the challenges were always overwhelming them.
One of the challenges, it appears, that you added was having the players hold their hands in very, very extremely cold water for 10 seconds. So their fingers would, what, be less malleable, less flexible?
Oh, no. We used the, a dirty little secret a lot of psychology research is that it's very, very difficult to study human aggression. You can call something an aggressive behavior in the lab, but it doesn't necessarily in any way correlate with kind of the things that wind up getting people suspended or put in prison. And so actually the cold water task that you're alluding to here was our method of actually measuring how aggressive players were. And so what we had was we had everyone stick their hands in the cold water for 25 seconds. And then at the end of the study, after the end of the experiment, we asked the participants how long should the next participant put their hand in the freezing cold water. And so we actually used that as a measurement of how kind of angry and how aggressive the participant was feeling. So they believed they were putting their hand in the cold water for the reason that you thought. We told them it was about video game performance and physiological reactivity. But in fact, what we were really interested in was how much more or less pain was the participant going to assign to someone else.
Wow, you would have had me on that one. Well, you used both violent and nonviolent games in your study. Was there any correlation between the content and the behavior?
Well, yeah. So one of the things that our studies did was when we introduced violent game content, in some of the studies, instead of just, you know, using two different video games that we pulled off the shelf, what we actually did was we manipulated a single video game. We added or took away violent content in terms of imagery, and we added and took away violent content in terms of the narrative, in terms of the story. So that way we were sure that the motivational aspects of the game were held constant. So what we did find was that when we made the video game more violent, when we made the story kind of more like a killer be killed narrative, players felt more on edge. They felt more threatened. But we didn't find that they actually felt more aggressive. Their feelings of aggression were very potently tied to kind of how competent they felt when they played, and was also tied to the opportunity to practice ahead of time. We found across the studies that when participants felt like their psychological need for competence was frustrated or impeded, they tended to increase in aggression, aggressive feelings during the course of play. They also had a much less fun time playing the video game.
And more likely to assign somebody else to pain.
Yeah. So on average, participants who played the competence thwarting version of the video game, they assigned 10 more seconds of physical pain than those who played the normal version.
We're speaking with Andrew Shabilsky, a researcher at the Oxford Internet Institute. That's at Oxford University. And he's co-author of a study about violent video games and aggression. Results may not be exactly what you think. Andrew, actually play this out in, if you could, with a game that a lot of people might know. You know, so I am playing blank game. What are the kind of components to this game that might challenge my competency, as you said, or frustrate me? And what are those rewards?
Yeah, sure. So every video game designer attempts to design a game that kind of balances the rewards of a game against the challenges that are presented. So, for instance, there's a very popular online video game called Halo 4.
Mm-hmm.
Halo 4 is a competitive online first-person shooter where teams of superhumans kind of duke it out online, and they play essentially capture the flag and these other tasks. The creators of this game, Microsoft, they try very hard to make sure that every time that you log on to play, you're matched against people who are about as good as you, people who are just as good at, you know, dodging attacks and just as good at firing weapons and achieving the objectives of the game, because they know that if you get put up continuously against either of those people that are very easy to defeat and you just get a bunch of rewards for easy slam dunk victories, or if they put you up against people who are amazingly better than you, it's not going to make for a fun play experience. On one end, it's going to drive a lot of boredom and disengagement. And on the other end, it's going to drive a lot of frustration and disengagement.
Does the frustration aggression thing apply to behavior outside of the video game world? I think, of course, of sports.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think sports is an obvious area where the game may not specifically be about aggression, so you don't need it to be football. You can have it be baseball. And having a frustration of your needs can definitely make you angry. You could also think of something like road rage, just your commute home. You've got the goal of having had a long day at work and you just want to get home to your family, and someone cuts you off going around the roundabout. And you feel threatened and you feel unsafe and you feel like you've got to go around the roundabout again. And that can definitely drive some short-term feelings of aggression.
Andrew, the question of whether or not violent video games, graphic video games, lead to aggressive behavior among players is not going away at any time soon. What do you think the results of your study might add to that conversation or discussion about the effect of games on players?
I'm hoping really that our research on motivational sources of aggression kind of has two effects on the way that this perennial debate is going to happen moving forward. The first way is a message to other researchers in the field. This research says that it is not sufficient for someone who's interested in studying the effects of video games just to compare any two random video games you buy off the shelf. A lot of things get manipulated when you just manipulate video games by picking different games. They're motivationally very different. And so really moving forward, my hope is that other researchers are going to take motivational issues seriously, and they're going to use the kind of programming tools that we use to manipulate individual video games to make sure that only the content of video games is different when they're making their comparisons. Second, the other main thing that comes out of this research for our group is in terms of society. Our hope in this is that people understand not just whether or not there's a statistically significant link between something like violent video games and some real world correlative aggression, but to have people think very critically about kind of the size of that correlation. And so the correlation is actually quite small. It's somewhere on the order of between half of 1% and 2%. So there are many things like the number of siblings in your household that are much, much better predictors of whether or not you get in trouble at school or you have some kind of conduct problem.
Well, Andrew Shabilsky, thank you so much for your time.
Anytime.
Andrew Shabilsky is a researcher at the Oxford Internet Institute, that is at Oxford University. We do have more on the study at wordofmouthradio.org. Up next, we turn from high-tech video games and go old school. How crowdfunding sites like Kickstarter are leading a board game renaissance. We'll pass go when Word of Mouth continues.